Hannah Murray on TRE in the afternoon.
Joining me on the line now is Ali Iceman. She's a relationship coach and founder of the inclusive relationship education platform, Passport to Pleasure. We're going to be talking about relationship design, the skills required for successfully navigating multi-partner dynamics, and how the same skills can also help improve monogamous relationships. Welcome to the show, Ali.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm delighted to be here.
Oh, it's great to have you with us. And it's amazing how topical this relation, this kind of subject is. I keep seeing articles in mainstream media about non-monogamous relationships. And I'm like, that's so weird. That's what I'm just about to speak about. So it seems like it's a hot topic at the moment, which is really fascinating. So how did it become a hot topic for you? Tell us about your journey.
Oh, goodness. So we have to rewind about a decade. And also, I love what you just said, too. Now you're seeing it everywhere because we're having this conversation. That's the Bader-Meinhof phenomenon. It's like when you buy a new car and then all of a sudden you see that car everywhere. This is not a new topic. We're just now getting more exposed to it on a bigger scale. So we are seeing it more frequently, but that doesn't mean it suddenly has become more frequent. So for me, this whole journey started about a decade ago. Really, it started before then. That's when I started actually exploring, but the curiosities were there. I just didn't have language for it. I always found myself really excited by hearing about my partner's, previous relationships, or I loved when they, I asked them to tell me if they thought someone, at the restaurant was cute or something like that. Like, that excited me. And I thought that was jealousy. So I didn't really understand why jealousy had such a bad rap. I'm like, this feels great. This is exciting. Mm-hmm. Of course, now I've learned later that's compersion, which is when you experience joy or pleasure from your partner experiencing joy or pleasure with someone else. But for me, that was my experience of what I thought jealousy was. So that kind of kept coming up in relationships. I was, again, rewind, 15, 20 years now, I'm only dating men, only, one at a time, which is what we call monogamy now. One partner at a time, not actually one partner for life, but I would bring it up and it resulted in, let's talk about maybe a threesome with another woman. And it did not happen with those partners, but it kept me curious. And I eventually got into what did become my final monogamous relationship where we did actually explore opening up. But again, with none of the tools, resources, knowledge, had I known then what I know now, I would have done everything differently. But it did give me a window into, hey, this is real for me. I need to explore this. I need to look at this and learn about this. And that was about 10 years ago. And my journey has just become an incredible part of my life. And so much so that, of course, now I've become a certified relationship coach. I teach and speak all over the world. It's one of my favorite things to talk about because for me, if we all have better relationships that last longer, we're going to have a better world that lasts longer. So whether you call it monogamous, non-monogamous, wherever you fall, all the same skills apply.
Yeah. And the important thing with this is obviously everybody's different. Everybody has different desires. Everybody has different needs in a relationship. And the whole thing comes down to understanding what you want and understanding what your partner wants. And hopefully, if you and your partner want the same thing, whether it is monogamy or to explore including other people in your relationship, as long as you're both on the same page, then that's a good thing.
Exactly. And in order to be on the same page, you have to make sure you're at least reading the same book. And what I see so much of when I work primarily with couples, but I do work with individuals and partnerships of any number of people participating. But primarily, a lot of monogamous couples will come to me if they're looking to explore opening up. And what I see so much of is they're using words that they think they both understand, but they've never actually talked about definitions. Like, for example, a big one, what is cheating? Define cheating. And they'll think they both understand it the same way. Meanwhile, someone's been doing an activity that the other one considers cheating and they don't, and they're inadvertently hurting each other. So for me, again, it breaks down into, do we even know what these things mean? Do we know how we define monogamy, how we define cheating, commitment, etc.? We're not having those conversations generally. So that's what excites me about exploring consensual non-monogamy with couples.
Yeah. And playing devil's advocate, advocate here. Obviously, there'll be people listening.
My favorite advocate.
There'll be people listening going, oh my goodness, I can't imagine, you know, bringing someone else into the relationship and all the potential problems that could come with that. I mean, you mentioned jealousy earlier. Obviously, bringing someone else into a relationship or into the bedroom could, of course, create jealousy. You know, you could think, oh, he looks like he's having more fun with her, or all kinds of things that could end up creating problems. How do you know whether it's going to be a positive thing, bringing someone else into your relationship, or making things worse?
Well, you have to have a foundation of trust, honesty. You have to have a relationship where you are both willing to be uncomfortable and be in that together. There's this illusion we have of, you know, when I have a certain label or a piece of jewelry on my finger, well, that guarantees that, you know, smooth sailing. We're not going to have any issues. We're going to be together forever. We're never going to be attracted to anybody else. There's a lot of assumptions that go into a compulsory relationship model. And so really quick, I just want to say what I mean by that. We have an idea that there's just one type of relationship that works. It's monogamy, and it should work for everyone. And if it doesn't, you're the problem. It's not statistically accurate. It's not historically accurate. It's not the whole conversation. So if you're going to step into opening up, if you're going to step into any kind of relationship, what is your intention? Do you want a relationship that you can grow in, that is supportive to you, is fulfilling to you? Is it something that you want playfulness in? What is the quality? What are the qualities, I should say, of a relationship that you're interested in? And a big one, again, that I see so often is this avoidance of discomfort, which, you know, lumps in the avoidance of jealousy, for example. Exploring consensual non-monogamy, polyamory, open relationships, think of it like exposure therapy. Throwing a label on your relationship like committed, married, monogamous does not inherently guarantee that your partner or you aren't going to be interested in other people down the line. The idea of opening up is not trying to be in denial of perfectly natural, normal human experiences. It's building the skills to have the conversations about that. Saying I'm attracted to another person is not the same thing as jumping into bed with them. But being able to have those conversations is key to a relationship with longevity.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I bet there's a lot of people that don't have these conversations, that do go through decades of marriage, going through the motions and thinking they're happy, maybe even pretending that they're happy, because it's just easier than maybe having some of these difficult conversations and being honest about how they feel.
Well, I don't even know if happiness is actually a shared goal that we all have with relationships. Like you said, there's people that are just kind of going through the motions. You hear somebody, oh, our 50th anniversary, congratulations, is the immediate response. What? Were you miserable for 50 years? Were you excited? Like, what was the quality of the 50 years? Why is longevity and staying together the only mark of a successful relationship? To me, I think success, we have to define that for ourselves. We have to define that with our partner or partners. And then we have to make sure we're building something that supports that definition of success.
Yeah. People even make jokes, don't they, when they've been together for a long time and anniversaries. It's all like, yep, I've done my time, and you'd get less for armed robbery and all these kinds of jokes.
Good Lord.
Which, again, so I know it's true. Only tongue in cheek, but yeah, it's true. Just because you've been together for 50 years, it doesn't mean you've been happy.
No, and that's why I like to call them relation trips. Like, it's a journey is an overused phrase, but it really is. And you need a roadmap to help you navigate. You're going to take some unexpected exits and turns and maybe even a U-turn sometimes. So having skills that enable you to adapt and learn from, you know, mistakes, for example, we get to make mistakes. Ideally, we're creating a relationship that is a safe space in which to do so. That's how we learn. So having that, you know, grace, assuming the best of our partner, this is so, so key. But avoiding things just because they're uncomfortable or scary is not how we build that trust. actually talking about it, actually looking at it together is how we build that intimacy and that trust.
Yeah. And the reality is we all change as we go through mm-hmm. life, what we want, what we think about, what we want to do with our time, our desires, all these kinds of things. It's really normal for that to change. So the idea mm-hmm. that couples stay together, just the two of you throughout your whole lives, and none of your thoughts or desires or what you want from life changes is crazy, because it does. Mm-hmm.
Hopefully. I mean, I always remember, we call them yearbooks. I don't know if you guys have the same things. I'm new to the UK, so forgive me. But in the US, we have yearbooks, and it's like, you know, big book of all the people who were in our graduating class and the years around us in school. And you would traditionally sign each other's yearbooks at the end of the year before summer break. And a big one was always, you know, never change. And I was like, screw you. Like, I'm going to change. I'm going to grow. Like, I want to become more than I am now.
Yeah, definitely. That's so true. And that's why, I mean, it really does go back to basics, doesn't it? From the point of view of communication is key. We all assume that our partner knows what we're thinking and knows what we want, whether it's that we want flowers on Valentine's Day or we don't care about Valentine's Day. You know, that is such a simple thing. And so often it's just assumed that the other person doesn't want something, doesn't care about Valentine's, or that assumed that it's the most romantic thing in the world to get flowers. And sometimes they haven't even had the conversation about what they want from Valentine's Day.
And what feels yummier, that your partner has, you know, done something because they're supposed to, or because they know you want it and they want to take care of you and mm-hmm. give you satisfaction and fulfillment? There's so many like interesting, what's the word? Not paradox, but sort of backwards ways of thinking, like around sex, intimacy, relationship, you know, planning sex, for example. That's a big one. Like, oh no, there must be something wrong, or that's not going to be very sexy if we do that. Do you not look forward to your vacations? Like, when you plan those, is it less exciting when it goes in the calendar? No, now you have anticipation and you've shared with each other what you want. You're giving your partner that roadmap to please you. That is a gift for both of you.
Yeah. So explain how a lot of the things that you've said about why bringing other people into relationships, why the knowledge and the skills from that can help people that are quite happy staying in a monogamous relationship.
Absolutely. So again, it's really important to remember, learning about consensual non-monogamy is not the same thing as actively opening up your relationship. So just learning about it, taking a course, working with a relationship coach who specializes in all relationships, that doesn't necessarily mean you're going to have a threesome tomorrow or you're going to start swapping with your neighbors. It's just learning. So that's why I refer to it as like exposure therapy. You are in the real world. You are no longer just saying the illusion of only one size fits all relationships is real. You're acknowledging the reality of you are both changing, growing individuals. Your needs are going to be changing and growing. You're probably at some point going to be attracted to other people, and you're willing to get uncomfortable. So one example is jealousy. We have, you know, our mainstream culture looks at being uncomfortable as not a good thing. We have a whole culture built around be comfortable, stay comfortable, avoid anything uncomfortable. And what's more uncomfortable than jealousy? But jealousy is actually a powerful tool for personal growth, self-development, and also building deeper intimacy and trust. Ignoring things that are happening is not how we build trust. Actually putting them on the table, learning how to hold that discomfort and sit in it with each other and talk through it, that's intimacy. You cannot have intimacy without vulnerability. That is a required ingredient. So that's why this, you know, idea of exposure therapy, right? You're acknowledging that, like, hey, you might let me know that you're maybe interested in going on a date with somebody else. Again, not the same thing as doing it. And ideally, you've built a relationship agreement that supports what you're building together, where you have, you know, clear definitions of if you're attracted to somebody else, we agree that we will talk about it right away before anything else. things like that. You know, we have a lot of assumptions around what, for example, a marriage contract is. That's the defining contract we have when it comes to relationships, but it's just about mergers and acquisitions. I don't know if you've read a marriage contract, but it has nothing to do with love, emotional commitment, fidelity, anything like that. So creating an actual relationship agreement that is, again, a growing and changing document that adapts with you and your living, breathing relationship is so important. So that these are some of the tools that are necessary for what I call multi-partner dynamics or consensual non-monogamy. And they're just as applicable if you have only one partner, because it's still a relationship. And a relationship, it's just an agreement between two or more people.
Yeah. It sounds so obvious, doesn't it? It sounds like the kind of thing we all should have adapted into our lives and relationships decades ago.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we're all taught. It's a sort of like a relationship. Like, you're human. You had parents. They probably taught you, you know, great tools. They probably gave you a great example of what, you know, communication and love look like. Right. So you should just be able to do this. It's a skill set.
Yeah.
It's an actual skill set. And I'm very, very pragmatic. So I'm very interested in applicable real world tools that integrate into daily life. I don't want you feeling like you have to go to college to be in a successful relationship. These are tools that serve you in every area of your life, because everything is relationship.
Yeah.
So if we're not prioritizing our most important relationships and learning the skills that actually support those, that's going to ripple out into the rest of our life.
Yeah. And everybody knows, you know, everybody hears or uses the phrase, you need to work at a relationship. You know, we all know that it doesn't just happen, and people don't have these perfect relationships without putting in any effort whatsoever. You know, we all know that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's, I see so often people who've stopped, you know, they're no longer working on the relationship, but they expect the relationship to still work for them.
Mm-hmm.
And we do, I think, have maybe not the best connotation when it comes to the word work, right? Work's
yeah.
unpleasant. It's something we have to do. It can be fun. Ideally, you can play and grow. Uncomfortable is not the same thing as unsafe. So really, again, getting used to, it's like going to the gym, right? The weights are always heavy. Always heavy. You're always uncomfortable. But the more you go in, the stronger you get. And it becomes just an integrated part of your life. Maybe you even start having more fun with the more physical activities in your life that used to be harder. That's work. It can really add a lot of joy and play. It doesn't have to be this sort of sweaty uphill battle every time.
Yeah. And the other thing which is fascinating, not just about relationships, but I guess life in general, is that we are all different, and we are a product of our parents and our childhood, and everybody has a different experience of how they were brought up and what they believe love to be, what a marriage should look like, all these kind of things, which again, mm-hmm. why communication is so important, because it's easy to assume that your views and what you believe love to be, everybody else thinks the same. And of course, that's just not true.
Yeah. Well, we all know what happens when we assume, right?
Yeah.
So making sure we stay out of the animal kingdom, having these conversations is so, so, so important. We, you know, if we didn't learn anything other than what we learned at home, you know, we don't go to school. We only learned, you know, maths and cooking and everything from home. Like, no, we learn about all these other things. Why on earth would we not also learn beyond the communication skills we may or may not have learned at home, beyond the relating skills? Like, this, again, it's just a skill set. We have no problem going to, you know, a professional communication skills course. Well, why on earth wouldn't you do the same thing for your love, romantic, platonic friendship, any relationships that are outside work? Why is that the only one that seems to be socially digestible? This serves you everywhere. How you relate is how you relate. So investing in your heart-centered relationships, really learning how to build them in a way that is not only reflective of you, but supportive of you and ideally everyone else involved. It's just a part of life. It sounds like a lot to us because we're not in this conversation, or we haven't been, I should say, up to this point, maybe. It's not that all consuming. It doesn't need to be, like I said, you don't need to go to university for relationships, but having just some intentional time set aside will dramatically improve wherever you are on your relationship.
Yeah, it does make a lot of sense. I suppose it has, I don't want to say negative connotations, but I suppose it has the connotations of, you know, going to see a couples therapist or a relationship therapist, mm-hmm. the idea when, you know, the marriage potentially is breaking down and you need couples yeah. therapy. But it doesn't need to be that bad in order, as you say, you know, in order to well, get some guidance.
All. Yeah, well, think about, you know, Olympic athletes. They don't start going to the trainer when they've broken something. They're training the whole time because they want to be optimal. Why on earth wouldn't you have a coach for something that you care about? Why are we waiting until, you know, the end seems near? You know, there is nothing wrong with continuously improving your skill set and having support before things get more challenging than they need to be. Imagine learning the skills you need so that you're ready when a friction point comes rather than just trying to like triage it as it's happening.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. And do you have, I assume every client that comes to you is different, but do you have a kind of typical client, people that come to you with very similar issues or at a similar stage in their relationship?
I'd say there's probably a few themes. I think there's a what's the word, like a misnomer that, you know, opening up was going to save our relationship. So this is kind of what we're talking about with, we're waiting until there's a massive, you know, friction point, fork in the road. This is our Hail Mary. Let's, you know, open up our relationship. That'll fix everything. No, it's the short answer. This is whatever is happening in your current relationship. You're just going to get more of that. So making sure again that you're using this as a curiosity. If you're stepping into, you know, learning more about consensual non-monogamy, learn first. There's a lot of times people will come to me, they've just jumped right in. Imagine if you wanted to learn how to swim and you just jumped right into the ocean. Ideally, you go to some lessons first. Maybe you see, you know, if maybe the pool is as far as you want to go. Like, this is a process. Getting curious about it, talk, maybe they've talked about it. And instead of talking about, hey, let's learn more again, they said, hey, I want to open up our relationship. Let's do it. And they've imploded because one partner, they're coming at it from, you know, I love what we have going on. I want to say yes and to what we have. I want to add more love to the love we already have. But the other partner is dealing with some insecurities. It's bringing up all these things they haven't addressed yet and they're feeling not enough, et cetera. So they're having two separate conversations about the same thing. And that's often where I'll come in and really be able to speak on behalf of their relationship, help them really create a shared language to make sure they're understanding what they're each saying so they can get on the same page. I've even had couples come to me who think they want to open up and explore polyamory or open relationships. And actually, at the end of the day, they just wanted to be able to talk about it. Mm-hmm. That's why I always say, like, whether you want to open up your relationship to include other people or you just want to open up more authentically to each other, I can help you open up without breaking up because we have to be able to talk about it. There's so much shame around our sexual curiosities, our intimate curiosities, our emotions. We have to be able to talk about these things with our closest companions. Yeah. Talking about something is not the same thing as doing it.
Oh, thank you, Ali, so much. That was so, so interesting. Yeah. It really was. I'm sure a lot of people took a lot from that. And we'll give out your website.
Absolutely.
If people want to get in touch, passporttopleasure.com. And that's the number two.
Yes. Yes. And I want to leave you all with one very, very important question to reflect on. And I'll have you answer it for me. What would you say is the most common relationship type out there right now? What's the type of relationship that most people are in right now?
As in like marriage or what do you mean?
Like monogamy, polyamory, open relationship.
I'd
what do you think is the most common?
I'd assume it's monogamy.
Right. So most people would assume that actually, statistically speaking, most people are in some form of non-monogamy. It's just a matter of whether or not it's consensual. So that's the conversation I want people to have. Let's talk about this so we don't have to hide behind, pretend labels, act out of integrity. There is no need to, you know, cheat, which is lying and deceiving. We can actually just talk about this and build relationships that support each other.
Wow. Fascinating. Ali Eisman, thank you so much for joining us. Lovely to chat with you.
Absolutely. My pleasure. Thank you so much.